This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, in for Terry Gross. The latest entry in the late-night TV talk show wars arrived on NBC with a lot of big names, not the least of which was the exciting, innovative house band.
From Studio 6B in Rockefeller Center, the National Broadcasting Company presents Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. Tonight's guests are Robert De Niro, Justin Timberlake, musical guest Van Morrison, and featuring the legendary Roots crew.
In the world of hip-hop, where most music is sampled, the Roots are exceptional. They play instruments, everything from electric guitar to tuba. And on TV, they're a lot more entertaining and more prominent than your everyday or every night house band. Last night on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy gave the Roots a chance to show off its improv skills.
We're fortunate to have the greatest band in Late Night with us, the Roots. Please give it up for the Roots, everybody. I love you guys. You guys are amazing. You can play any type of music, right?
Yeah, you know, you name it, we can do it.
All right, well, great. Let's play with that a little bit. What if I pick someone from the audience and we'll see if the Roots can make up a song about the person in the audience? Is that cool? Are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
How about you guys? You guys ready? Let's do it. All right, let's zoom in. How about, yeah, zoom in with the red hair. Yeah. Yeah, you look perfect. What's your name?
Jenny.
Okay, Jenny. This is all helping our tune. What's your favorite color?
Purple.
You're not making it easy on them at all, are you? It's going to rhyme with purple. Where are you from?
Hartville, Ohio.
Hartville, Ohio. All right, Roots, here's the deal. We got Jenny. She's from Hartfield, Ohio. This is not easy. All right. She's a Hartfield, and she loves the color purple. Let's see what happens.
Love Geek Chic, he got the nerdy lock. We finish in the second week here at 30 Rock. My man Jimmy, yeah, I know you heard he hot. How he matches his ties up with whatever shirt he got. Speaking of colors, on shows we got many. Just like purple, that's the favorite color of Jenny Word. When I spit rhymes, you know the thought ill. So take that song back to your people in Hartsville.
Our next guest, Questlove, is the co-founder and drummer of The Roots. Terry spoke with him in 2003. Questlove, also known as Amir Thompson, grew up in Philadelphia around music. His father, Lee Andrews, led the doo-wop group Lee Andrews and the Hearts, which had the hit single Teardrops. Questlove co-founded The Roots in 1987 when he was a student at the Philadelphia High School for Creative and Performing Arts. That was back when sampling, not live drumming, provided most of the beats in hip-hop music.
Coming up in high school, when the Roots first started, you know, hip-hop really wasn't that elaborate an arrangement. I'm talking about hip-hop circa 1984, 85, 86. I mean, it's pretty much just a drum beat, a simple drum beat, and a stab. A stab would be sort of like the exclamation point at the end of a sentence. You know, it could be scratched in or just like some sort of noise, mm-hmm. an enforcement noise. And, you know, so in high school, pretty much Black Thought, Tariq Trotter would, you know, come up to me and just name any popular song at that time and point and just say, yo, play Top Billing. And, you know, because it was a drum arrangement, I knew how to play it. And that was like the most amazing thing to him. That, oh, he could play Top Billing. He could play... You know, The Bridge Is Over. He could play, you know, just naming all these songs, and I could play them. I kind of thought it was natural.
Okay, well, I'm going to stop you right there, because that's kind of interesting. Since you came up in the era of sampling, as an actual musician, your friends mm-hmm. expected you to basically play the samples. You're still expected
to
play, but you're still expected to play, like, other people's music.
Right. Well, I mean, that's... Hip-hop is audio pop art, really. It's just a collage of other ideas. And even at the time, I didn't know that, okay, sampling is the proper term for it. For the hip-hop nation, pretty much the first introduction to real sampling that we've ever seen was this episode of The Cosby Show when Stevie Wonder runs over the Huxtables' car with his limousine. Well, not that violent, but, you know, he invites them to a studio session. And for the first time, America got to see the process of sampling, in which you say something and it's repeated back to you. And after me and my friend saw that episode, we were begging for whatever that machine was called. We didn't know what it was called. You know, like in our heads, it was sort of like the Flintstone episode where, you know, like the little bird is inside of the machine and recreating the noise. And we didn't know how in the world that happened. So just during Christmas, Casio happened to make a product called an SK1 machine, which allowed you about maybe 3 or 4 seconds worth of sampling time. And, you know, me and all my friends got this little toy keyboard for Christmas. And, you know, you mess around with it a little while. You do like all the curse words, you know, and all that stuff. And then you start getting serious about it. And that's when I would like run to the basement where my drum set was and try and cram in 8 bars worth of drum breaks within 3 seconds, which, you know, you have to be pretty fast to do it.
Right.
And then I just, you know, realized the endless possibilities of a sampler, you know.
You started playing drums when you were in high school, yes?
No, actually,
earlier
I started
than that?
When I was 2.
Oh, okay.
I was 2 years old. I started the Roots when I was in high school. My father is an oldies doo-wop singer from the Philadelphia area.
Leandros of Leandros and the Hearts.
Yeah, Leandros and the Hearts. So I pretty much, my childhood is pretty much based just backstage at doo-wop extravaganza shows, you know, like Dick Clark Presents, you know, and there would be like 10 groups, Don and Wine, Harvey and the Moonglows, the Tokens, you name it. If they were from the 50s or the 60s, it would just be a big show at either like Madison Square Garden or the Spectrum or out in the Forum in L.A. So pretty much that's, I grew up backstage.
No,
Leandro's, watching all these groups.
Leandro's biggest hit, I think, was Teardrops in 1957.
Teardrops. Yeah. 57. Yeah, 57.
Would you be willing to sing a few lines from it just to refresh listeners' memories?
I wouldn't want to scare your listeners, so.
Okay, well, how about this? How about we play a little bit of it?
We can do that, yeah.
I sit in my room, looking out at the rain. My tears are like crystals, they cover my window pane. I'm thinking of our lost romance and how it should have been. Oh, if we only could start over again. Running out on you, I was wrong to take a chance with somebody new. I sit in my room, looking out at the rain. My tears are like crystals, they cover my window pane. I know you never.
Okay, so that's Leandros and the Hearts. So you grew up, you know, backstage and watching your father perform. What sense did it give you of what the music life was like? And then you probably watched your father kind of drop out of sight after the doo-wop era was over. So you also knew what it was like to no longer be in the limelight after having been in it as a young man.
I mean, I was born in the 70s, so pretty much I came along.
Oh, you came along in the
yeah, it really wasn't about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really wasn't about it. I mean, even though he made it a career, if anything, he taught me that there is a plan B, you know, and that not everyone gets the plan A limelight.
Right. What was his
by the
plan
time
B?
By the time I was born, you know, he had met and married my mother. I have a sister as well, and they had opened up a boutique store, and they were quite content. And you know, as with any music phenomenon that occurs 20 years before, there's an upsurge of it 20 years later. And I guess most of that started when Sha-Na-Na appearing at Woodstock, and then pretty much after that, just Dick Clark would throw a slew of shows just in the tri-state area, in the New York area, any place that loved doo-wop.
Mm-hmm.
And my father just made made a great living out of it.
And don't you often wonder if there's going to be like old school rap shows? Like,
oh, there is right now.
Is there already?
Totally. And the thing with hip hop is the motto for hip hop is definitely here today and gone today. So
yeah, I know what you mean.
Anything under 5 years is pretty much considered old school. This weekend, I was listening to a popular New York radio station, and they were like, now, back in the day, Wu-Tang Clan, da-da-da-da, old school. I was like, wait a minute, Wu-Tang? That's 6 years ago.
Right.
It's like 6-7 years ago. You know, old school to me is, okay, maybe we can say, like, Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On, like a song that's definitely over 20 years old or something, you know, near 30 years old. But, yeah, pretty much... in the hip hop, it's here today and it's gone today.
Let's get back to your high school years. You went to the High School of Creative and Performing Arts.
Performing Arts, right.
In Philadelphia.
Yes.
And so that means that you were exposed at a young age to artists of your age of every sort.
Exactly.
You know, painters and dancers and people in theater.
Everything.
And music of
Boys
every sort.
Boys to Men rehearsing in the...
Boys to Men was in your school?
In the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Always rehearsing.
Was it good to be exposed to so much?
It was perfect. You know, like my first... I actually, unfortunately, I came to Performing Arts High School in the 11th grade. I started, Performing Arts had a private school sector that I went to from first to eighth grade. Then my parents took me out of that school and tried to send me to a college prep school, which was good academic. You know, I could wind up on Jeopardy, you know, you know, talk about the Iliad or something. But, you know, my heart was with music development. And so I begged them to send me to the public school for performing arts, and finally got my wish for the 11th and 12th grade. And walking there, like, I'd never been to public school, and pretty much my only exposure to that type of school was watching the television show Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're kind of wondering, like, okay, is this the type of school that's going to be like a cliche? Like, are they going to break out and dance numbers in the hallway and you know, to do all the things that you see on television. And, you know, I was, like, real skeptical of it. Like, it's not going to be, like, Fame or whatever. And sure enough, like, you walk into class and, you know, they're singing, you know, Boyz II Men's practicing in the corner. And you have, like, Krista McBride and Joey DeFrancesco trading fours down the hallway.
Wait, these are now well-known jazz musicians.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, like, the who's who of, like, the thespian world rehearsing, you know, their sonnets over there. And it's crazy. It was really a weird experience for me.
Now, the roots are from Philly. And for a lot of rappers, like, the place they're from becomes, like, mythologized through their raps.
Right.
What do you think you've done, like, to create a Philadelphia in your music?
Well, Philadelphia had sort of a bad / nondescript reputation between...
In hip-hop, you mean? Because there was the Philly sound before that.
Yeah, I'm just talking in terms of hip-hop.
Mm-hmm,
even
right.
Even though I'll say two of the major important factors of hip-hop history have originated in Philadelphia. Number one, gangster rap. Pretty much, there's debate as to whether Ice-T, L.A., who's from L.A., or Schoolie D, who's from 52nd and Parkside, was the first quote-unquote gangster rapper. And pretty much anybody that's familiar with Schoolie D can give you pretty much an account of where they were the first time they ever heard his classic, PSK, What Does It Mean? You know, because we just never heard a rap that explicit. You know, pretty much hip-hop before then was about partying. And, you know, there were some reality rhymes here and there. You know, the message by Grandmaster Flash, and maybe it's like mm-hmm. that by Run DMC. But, you know, pretty much everyone's been, like, politically correct. You didn't hear that much profanity, that much cursing, and that much honesty. You know, Schooly D talked like your older cousin on the corner, you know, or the guys that you knew down the street on the corner. And, you know, he was very influential to a lot of, right. of people, the Beastie Boys, and the list goes on.
So what's your also, yeah, what's your image of Philly in your music?
Well, we had to take that, and well, let me just quickly say that the other important element was the art of DJing. Philadelphia has four very important pioneers in DJing: Jazzy Jeff, DJ Cash Money, DJ Miz, and DJ Cheese, all from the tri-state area, and they're pretty much the standard for which DJs today are basing their skills on. When you talk about DJs doing the look mono hand tricks and whatnot, so pretty much that's all that Philly. Those were the two major factors that Philly offered in the 80s, and you know, living under New York's shadow didn't help matters much because, you know, they were the creme de la creme of right. culture.
One last thing, I'm interested in your record collection. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand you have a really big one. What's the range of things that you listen to?
Anything. I'm just into anything musical. You know, I like the incredible Bongo Rock group. I like David Bowie. I like, you know, I collect a lot of rare hip hop records, and I collect just a lot of obscure records that have been used in samples. I'm very curious in the ingredients that other producers have used to make their records. You know, sort of like someone going out and buying a cookbook to see the ingredients that went right. inside of a right. particular stew. So I collect those type of things.
Do you collect a lot of vinyl?
Yeah, I'm about 27,000 strong right now.
A vinyl?
I know that's not messing with DJ Shadow's collection. I heard he's up to 60,000.
Wow, it's mighty impressive though.
I got some ways to go, but yeah, I'll get there.
Okay, and one final question.
Yes.
How come you wear an afro?
Because I'm secretly a chia pet.
I won't sing the theme.
right.
Yeah.
My hair just grows. I come from a family that, you know, I don't have the patience nor the time to go to a barbershop and get it cut every 3 seconds. So my hair just grows. It's always been problematic for me. Just thank God it's in style now. Imagine me trying to get through this hairstyle in the late 80s and the early 90s, you know. Back then I could do a flat top thing, but I keep it. It's my crown, you know. It's sort of symbolic now, but yeah, it was a problem back in the day, you know, people staring at me like, oh my God, you know, now it's no thing because everyone has it.
Besides you're you, so
yeah, exactly.
You can do it now.
I'm an individual.
That's right. Thank
or
you so much.
One of the Missing Jacksons.
Oh,
all right, thank you.
Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Tara.
Amir Thompson, a.k.a. Questlove, speaking to Terry Gross in 2003. His band The Roots is now on TV every weeknight as the house band on NBC's Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. Here's a track from the latest CD by The Roots, Rising Down.
Because of what it was, I did what I did, cause it does what it does. I don't put nothing above what I am, what I love.
My family, my blood, my city and my hood. Hater for the greater good. I'm back from Hollywood and I ain't changed a lick. Though I know I probably should, but what I'm doing is not a good look. I never did it by the good book. As a lifetime crook, all the petty crime took a toll on me. I look around at my homies, it's getting old on me. But still something got a hold on me. Maybe it's fate. If it's coming, yo, I'm willing to wait. I'm not running, I done ran through the muck. I done scrambled and such. I done robbed and odd jobbed and gambled enough. Till I'm put up in handcuffs and pissing in the cup. If it's a guy, I don't know if he listening or what.